Hey there, ready to have your mind blown by the surprisingly complex social lives of, well, everything?
It's really something else.
We're diving into a chapter from your biology textbook today.
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
And trust me, it's way more interesting than it sounds.
Way more. It really makes you question that whole survival of the fittest thing. You'd be surprised how much teamwork is involved in the evolutionary game.
Exactly. We're talking about social evolution and sexual selection from bacteria to, yes, even humans.
Don't forget about those single-celled organisms, too.
So imagine you're a single-celled organism, right?
Never thought of it like that.
Turns out, even you have to figure out how to play nice with others.
That's right. The chapter kicks off with this idea that cooperation is just as crucial as competition when it comes to survival.
Right. Makes sense.
Take bacteria, for example.
Bacteria. They're everywhere.
They might seem like loners, but they actually communicate and cooperate using something called quorum sensing.
Quorum sensing. Okay, that sounds a little intimidating.
It's actually pretty straightforward. Basically, bacteria release these chemical signals, kind of like messages in a bottle. As the bacterial population grows, you have more signals floating around.
It's like a bacterial party getting louder and louder.
Exactly. And once the music hits a certain volume, meaning the concentration of signals reaches a certain level, it triggers a coordinated response from the whole group. Think of it like a flash mob, but synchronized by chemicals instead of a dance routine.
I like where this is going. So what are these bacteria coordinating? Are they just trying to start the wave at a microscopic level?
More interesting than that. They can coordinate all sorts of things, from launching an attack with toxins to building those slimy biofilms you see on surfaces.
Like in your sink.
The chapter mentions Vibrio fishery, which live inside a certain type of squid.
Hold on. Bacteria living inside a squid. Tell me this squid glows in the dark.
You're way ahead of me. It's the Hawaiian bobtail squid, and it actually uses these glowing bacteria for camouflage and to attract prey.
Okay, that's just plain cool. But how does it work? Do the bacteria just decide to glow whenever?
That's where quorum sensing comes in. The bacteria use it to make sure they only start glowing when their population is large enough to produce a visible light. It's all about efficiency. If only a few bacteria are glowing, it's a waste of energy, right?
Makes sense. So the squid offers the bacteria a nice place to live, and in return, the bacteria become this amazing bioluminescent light show. Talk about a win-win.
Exactly. It shows how even at this microscopic level, cooperation can lead to some pretty incredible adaptations.
This is already making me look at the world a little differently. But the chapter takes this idea of cooperation to a whole other level with this concept of bacterial.suicide.
It sounds dramatic, but it's actually a fascinating survival strategy.
How so?
Imagine a bacterial colony under stress, like they're running low on resources. Some cells have this system where they essentially sacrifice themselves for the greater good.
Okay, how does that work? Do they just spontaneously combust?
It's more of a controlled demolition. They activate this genetic mechanism called a toxin-antitoxin system. It's like a self-destruct button that releases their cellular contents, which then become nutrients for their neighbors.
Wow. Talk about going out with a bang. It's like a final act of generosity for the colony.
Right. It ensures that at least some of the bacteria have a chance to survive the tough times. This actually ties into a bigger concept in evolutionary biology called kin selection.
Kin selection. Break that down for me.
Essentially, it's this idea that helping out your relatives, even at a cost to yourself, can still benefit your own genes in the long run. Because your relatives share many of your genes, their survival helps ensure those genes are passed on.
So it's like a genetic ripple effect. Their sacrifice helps preserve the family legacy, so to speak.
Exactly. And this concept of kin selection can help explain all sorts of seemingly selfless behaviors in nature. It highlights that evolution isn't just about individual survival, it's about the survival of genes, which can sometimes favor cooperation and even self-sacrifice.
Okay, so even bacteria understand the importance of family.
It's all relative, right?
But this chapter doesn't shy away from the darker side of the evolutionary coin.
Things get a little intense.
We're talking infanticide, cannibalism. It's intense.
It definitely challenges our sense of what's right.
I mean, wow.
But from a purely biological perspective, right, these behaviors make sense in certain contexts.
So how do we wrap our heads around something like infanticide in the animal world?
Well, the chapter uses the example of some mammal species where males compete fiercely for mates.
Yeah.
A new male taking over a group might kill existing offspring to bring the females back into a reproductive state more quickly.
It's brutal. But I can see the cold logic from the male's perspective.
Yeah, survival of the fittest, right?
He's eliminating competition for his own potential offspring.
Exactly. It's all about maximizing their chances of passing on their genes.
Even if it's rough.
Even if it means some pretty ruthless tactics.
And then there's sexual cannibalism.
Oh, yeah.
I have to admit, this one really threw me for a loop when I first read about it.
It's definitely one of the more dramatic examples of sexual selection.
For sure.
The chapter points out that it's more common than you might think.
Really?
Particularly in certain spiders and insects.
Spiders eating their mates. Why on earth would that be advantageous?
Well, think about it from the female's perspective. She's the one who invests more energy in producing eggs.
Okay, that makes sense.
Eating the male provides a massive nutritional boost.
Oh, I see.
Which can be crucial for producing a large, healthy clutch of eggs.
So it's like a gruesome form of parental investment. The male literally becomes fuel for his offspring.
In a way, yes. It highlights how natural selection can favor behaviors that seem counterintuitive to us.
To say the least.
But remember, it's all about maximizing reproductive success in the grand scheme of evolution.
This chapter really makes you question everything you thought you knew about romance.
Right. Speaking of which, we also see examples of deception in the animal kingdom.
Like what?
Remember those nuptial gifts we talked about earlier?
Yeah, the male spiders bringing the female a snack to avoid being eaten themselves. Talk about a high-stakes first date.
Well, it turns out some males try to game the system by offering fake gifts.
Fake gifts? Like what? A piece of lint wrapped in silk?
Pretty much. It might be something completely inedible or a real food item that's been completely drained of nutrients.
Wow, sneaky.
The male is basically trying to trick the female into mating with him without giving up a valuable resource.
That's both hilarious and kind of sad.
It's rough out there.
So much for honesty in the animal kingdom. But it makes you wonder, how do these complex behaviors evolve in the first place?
That's where the concept of runaway selection comes in.
Yeah, okay.
It can lead to the evolution of exaggerated traits.
Exaggerated.
Even if those traits eventually become a liability.
Okay, I remember this term from the chapter, but give me a refresher. How does it work?
Imagine a species of bird where females prefer males with longer tail feathers.
Yeah.
Males with slightly longer tails might attract more mates and pass on their genes, leading to offspring with even longer tails.
Makes sense.
This process can continue over generations, leading to increasingly exaggerated traits.
So you end up with these birds sporting ridiculously long tails just because their great-great-grandfathers had a slight advantage.
Exactly. It's like a fashion trend that spirals out of control.
Wow.
The chapter actually uses the example of the Irish elk.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
These extinct elk had antlers that spanned over 12 feet wide.
12 feet. That's wider than my car. They must have been tripping over those things.
It's possible. Those massive antlers probably made it difficult to move through forests and escape predators.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the downside of runaway selection.
Right.
At a certain point, the costs of an exaggerated trait might outweigh the reproductive benefits.
So it's this delicate evolutionary dance between attracting a mate and, you know, not dying because your own body became a liability.
Exactly. It highlights the dynamic and sometimes unpredictable nature of evolution.
This is all so fascinating, but I have to ask, how does this apply to us? We humans have our own complex social structures and mating rituals.
Of course.
Are you telling me it all boils down to these ancient evolutionary drives?
That's a great question, and it's something the chapter touches on towards the end.
Okay.
It suggests that while we humans like to think we're above such base instincts,
yep,
we're still products of millions of years of evolution.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me the human connection. How do these concepts play out in our everyday lives?
Well, consider parental investment, for example.
Yeah.
Just like in many other species, human females typically invest significantly more time and energy in pregnancy and raising offspring.
That's definitely true. 9 months of carrying a baby is no walk in the park.
Right. So from an evolutionary perspective,
okay,
it makes sense that females would be more selective about their mates.
Yeah.
They're looking for partners who not only have good genes, but who are also likely to stick around and help raise those kids.
So those cheesy romantic comedies about finding the one are tapping into some deep-seated evolutionary desires.
It's certainly possible. Of course, human behavior is incredibly complex.
Right, of course.
And we're not just slaves to our biology.
Right.
But understanding these evolutionary underpinnings can give us a new perspective on why we behave the way we do.
It's like a whole new lens for viewing human relationships.
Yeah.
But the chapter also touched on a concept that's a little harder to stomach.
No.
The idea of conflict. even between a mother and her offspring.
Interesting.
Isn't that a bit counterintuitive? Don't they share the same genes?
They do share genes, but they are also distinct individuals with their own evolutionary interests.
Okay.
And sometimes those interests can clash.
Okay, I'm listening. Give me an example. When would a mother and her child be at odds, evolutionarily speaking?
Well, imagine a situation where a pregnancy is putting the mother's health in serious jeopardy.
That's a tough situation to even think about.
It is, and thankfully rare. But in those cases, the mother's body might initiate a miscarriage to save her own life.
Wow.
Even if it means the loss of the offspring.
Right.
It's a stark reminder that natural selection operates on the individual level.
Okay.
And sometimes those forces can be at odds even within a family unit.
That's heavy stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's a stark reminder that evolution doesn't always fit neatly into our human ideas of what should be, right?
Exactly.
Nature is just different.
Nature plays by its own rules, and those rules can be harsh.
For sure.
But that's what makes studying it so fascinating, don't you think?
Absolutely. This whole deep dive has really made me rethink my understanding of evolution. I used to think it was all about cutthroat competition, that whole survival of the fittest cliche.
Yeah, it's a common misconception.
It's kind of ingrained in us.
As we've seen, cooperation is just as important.
Totally.
Even at the smallest scale.
It's crazy.
Those bacteria, those amoebas,
right.
They're not just out for themselves. They've evolved these incredibly complex strategies for working together.
It's wild.
Finding that balance between individual success and the good of the group.
It's like they've created their own societies with rules and hierarchies and even, dare I say, morals.
In a way.
Even if those morals sometimes involve eating your mate.
It really makes you think about the roots of our own social structures, doesn't it?
For sure. It's given me a whole new perspective on human nature.
Yeah.
But speaking human nature, this chapter also dove into those eye-catching differences we see between the sexes. Those often extravagant traits that seem to defy logic.
Yeah, yes. Sexual selection at its finest.
It's crazy.
It's amazing how those seemingly frivolous traits, like a peacock's tail or a bird's elaborate song,
right.
Actually reveal so much about the forces shaping evolution.
Right. It's like those over-the-top displays are really just advertisements for good genes. Like a biological billboard saying, hey, choose me. I'm the best mate.
And females, as the ones who typically invest more in reproduction,
right.
Become the discerning customers in this evolutionary marketplace.
I like that.
They're the ones driving the evolution of those traits.
It's almost like those cheesy dating shows, but with higher stakes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about competition between males, right? It's
right.
More nuanced than that.
It's about this interplay between the sexes.
Right, that makes sense.
This constant pressure to find the best way to pass on your genes to the next generation.
It's like an elaborate, intricate dance that's been going on for millennia.
A dance that shaped the incredible diversity of life we see on Earth.
Well said. This deep dive has been a wild ride. From bacterial suicide packs to deceptive spider gifts, it's been quite a journey.
It has.
As we wrap up, what are some key takeaways you hope listeners will ponder long after this episode ends?
I think the biggest takeaway is that evolution is far more complex and nuanced than we often give it credit for.
Totally.
It's not a simple linear process. It's messy.
Right.
It's intricate. And sometimes it's downright bizarre.
Definitely bizarre. But ultimately, it's about more than just survival of the fittest, right?
Absolutely. It's about cooperation, adaptation,
yeah.
And the remarkable ways life finds a way to thrive, even in the face of seemingly impossible odds.
Beautifully said. I think we could all learn a thing or two from the elegant and, yes, often strange ways nature works.
For sure.
If a single-celled organism can figure out teamwork, maybe there's hope for us yet.
Now there's a thought to leave you with. Until next time, stay curious.